This is Radio Influence.
Got him in the white trunks. He hurt him.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Whoa. And here comes as a mention. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Tyron Woodley and Stephen Thompson once again have a controversial fight go to decision, and this time it was not a draw as Tyron Woodley retained the UFC welterweight title with a majority decision in the main event of UFC 209. And on Friday night, Julia Budd became the second women's Bellator champion in the history of that promotion as she scored a stoppage victory over Marlos Kunin in the main event of Bellator 174. And right after the event was over, Marlos Kunin announced her retirement. We're going to talk about those two fights and everything that happened this past weekend in MMA on this edition of the MMA Report post-fight podcast. Of course, Daniel Galvan will join me to talk about how did he score the main event of Tyron Woodley and Stephen Thompson. Also, we'll kind of talk about Lando Vannetta, David Timor, Rashad Evans. What is the future looking for him? Also, we'll talk about the come-from-behind victories by Darren Elkins and Yuri Alcantara. But before I bring in Daniel, I'll let you know about our sponsor, Fight TV. Fight is your number one source for MMA, boxing, and pro wrestling video. Live stream free and premium MMA, pro wrestling, and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV using just the Fight app. Download Fight free today by going to Fight, FITE.TV/Radio Influence/. Once again, that is Fight, FITE.TV/Radio Influence/. And that link is also available on RadioInfluence.com. Of course, you can always listen to this podcast on RadioInfluence.com or on the MMAReport.com, also on iTunes and Stitcher. Just search the MMA Report. Daniel, as always, how's the weekend, man?
You know, it was a good weekend. I thoroughly enjoyed it, but of course, it was completely dominated by mixed martial arts action. You know, I was very, very sad, Jason, that we go and we record our preview podcast, and I swear, man, it was, what, 2 or 3 hours when we received the news that the great fight between Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson was off. Down about that. But I tell you what, Jason, I'm very proud of some of the things we did on the pre-fight show. Okay, there were plenty of things we got wrong. But my surest bet on the card nearly played out, like the plus whatever, 5,500 odds or whatever of a draw taking place in the main event. That was almost a reality. But more importantly, you really highlighted like the Darren Elkins likelihood of an upset. So that took place. And so I feel good about that. At least.
Well, you know, when he was getting hammered out for 2 rounds, I was like, oh, that wasn't necessarily me pointing that out. But man, then what a come from behind victory by him. Of course, that was back to back come from behind victories there on the preliminary card. But I was glad on the preview show that we noted a couple of times that we were recording the show prior to the weigh-ins. Of course, you know, we all know what happened. Khabib Nurmagomedov gets admitted to the hospital about 4 or 5 hours before the official weigh-ins take place. And ultimately his fight against Tony Ferguson, was pulled off. And, you know, let's start talking off about what happened there with Khabib and Tony. You know, after when they did the conference call for this event, and it was with the four fighters that were the main event and co-main event, Tony Ferguson made the case that his fight should have been the title fight. And of course, you know, obviously, you know, Tyron and Steven don't like hearing that. But after this fight fell out, it became pretty clear based on the fans' reaction. And I even put out a Twitter poll on Saturday basically saying, hey, with Khabib and Tony off this fight card, are you buying it? Yes, no, or maybe. Majority of the responses were no. And I think it kind of proved Tony Ferguson's point that that should have been the main event.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one. So the way I would talk about that is, without question, the main event should have been the welterweight championship fight. I think the only way you kind of put an interim title fight above a quote-unquote legitimate title fight or an official undisputed title fight, the only way you do that is if your star power is so big that you need to do it, like a Conor McGregor-type star power. Otherwise, just slot it under. It just makes more sense. It gives more weight to your championships that aren't contested. But with that being said, it was kind of clear in the wake of that fight getting canceled, that a lot of the juice, a lot of momentum of this pay-per-view was entirely dependent on that Nurmagomedov-Tony Ferguson fight. I mean, when you have a fight be made three times, maybe not in a row, but three times, it's probably a good fight. It's probably a fight people want to watch, and that was the case. I mean, this was the fight that really would determine an absolute number one contender, a fight with so many questions, a fight we all went back and forth on, a fight between two guys as well. A fight with one guy who knows how to talk some trash in Nurmagomedov and a very exciting fighter in Tony Ferguson. So this was without a doubt the most interesting fight on the card. But when push comes to shove, I still think the right decision was to have the World Toy Championship in the main event. With that being said, that was a crap fight.
Yeah, it was, you know, I was at a buddy's house watching the fights, and as the fight hit the third and fourth round, definitely the interest was not as much on the fights as, you know, obviously, you know, David Timer and Orlando Veneta fight was exciting. But one of the things that I do want to talk about Khabib and Ferguson, I guess there's a couple of things we can talk about it, because it is kind of, you know, obviously one of the major storylines following UFC 209 is about what happened main event. But do want to talk about, you know, kind of this whole fallout from the co-main event. And I know it's very easy to sit there and want to blame the early weigh-ins, but I'm not one of those guys that's going to blame the early weigh-ins. I think that maybe instead of them being at 9 a.m. local time, maybe push it to noon, because you do hear some things from fighters. But it's not like the UFC came to all these fighters on this card on Wednesday and said, hey, by the way, we're weighing in at 9 o'clock. They've known this. At the end of the day, this is not on the commissions doing early weigh-ins. This is on the fighters. They sign a contract. They know what they have to, the weight they have to make. At the end of the day, you have to look, the number one responsibility you have to look at is on the fighter for not putting themselves or maybe not knowing how to cut weight properly. And yeah. I'll tell you what, beginning of that of the pay-per-view broadcast, boy, I did not see that coming with Dominic Cruz just railing on Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Yeah, I mean, there's always an awkward thing, right? Where on one side, you want to rail on a guy. You want to be like, well, you signed this contract. How could you not possibly do it? But, and I think where we really begin to feel comfortable with that narrative is if we see a fighter repeatedly miss the weight. I mean, when you are John Lineker, at some point in time, you're deserving of the criticism. When you're Kevin Gastelum, you're deserving of the criticism. But it is always worth pairing that with, like, you know, cutting weight is incredibly hard. And when I say incredibly hard, I mean, you have the game plan, you have the intentions. It's not like you woke up and ate pizza the day before. Maybe Stephen Thompson did, but he made weight. But I'm sure the intentions were there. But I would imagine his body just freaking shut down. And yeah, that's just a hard thing to prepare for. Like, the preparation, I'm not particularly sure, is an ingredient when it comes to stuff like that.
It should be noted, this is the second time you can't say he missed weight because he actually never stepped on the scale, but we know that's what's happening here. But remember, he did miss weight back in 2013 when he fought Abel Trujillo at UFC 160. It ended up being a catchweight bout of 158.5 pounds. So there was an issue there. So, you know, we haven't heard from Khabib, and we do want to hear from Khabib of exactly what happened. Why was he unable to make weight? Was there, you know, was it just something where, you know, he just couldn't cut the weight off? I mean, that's going to be, you know, a lot of questions. But one of the things I saw some people, like, you know, the fallout of this, and obviously everyone was disappointed. You know, my first thought was, yeah, I'm disappointed this fight's not happening, but, you know, hey, let's have some, let's hope everything's okay with Khabib Nurmagomedov first off. Let's not talk about the fighter. Let's just talk as a person. Hopefully, health-wise, he's there. And I saw people going, oh, man, put him on UFC 210. I'm like, hold on. This guy just went to a hospital for a bad weight cut, you know, reportedly. And now you want him to fight 30 days later? I don't know about that.
Who was the guy commenting on that article, Dana White?
I saw multiple fans doing this. I know. They were, and I'm just like, in my mind, I'm going, I don't think so. And the fact that it's going to be in New York State, you got to wonder with their regulations, whether they even, you know, would allow that. I would love to see Khabib and Tony fight. But I think if you're Tony Ferguson, you're probably your mindset right now is, can I get a fight with Conor McGregor?
Yeah, and this also kind of, whenever you see Nurmagomedov complain about not getting a title shot, there is some level of annoyance with that.
And then I tweeted out this. You remember after UFC 205 when Conor McGregor was basically like, I don't know if I want to fight with Khabib because he has a history of not showing up.
Yeah.
This adds more ammo to Conor McGregor in terms of a potential fight with Khabib at some point.
Yeah, I mean, Nurmagomedov has put himself in a position where he's going to have to do a lot. And the whole theme with divisions at 145 and 155 and 170 is, honestly, it's not about winning the title. It's about putting yourself in a position to get a Conor fight, which is a really weird place for the UFC to be. I mean, because of what the UFC's done, the titles don't necessarily mean too much anymore. It's all about fighting McGregor, which is just a scary proposition when you're talking about a guy who has a real interest in boxing and doing some, you know, pay-per-view where he's doing a Jamaican bobsled or riding a horse or doing ice hockey. I mean, he has so many interests that it is scary, Jason. If you're the UFC and the most important question isn't, for Tyron Woodley, like, who's he going to defend his title next? It's, oh, maybe he can fight Conor next. Stuff like that. That's the issue. And for Woodley, I mean, obviously, he's not in a position to do that either. But at this point in time, if you look at the landscape of the UFC, if your name ain't Diaz, I don't know if Conor's taking that fight, which is a weird, weird place to be because I don't really want to watch those fights.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, and Dana White commented this. He did a scrum with, you know, basically their television partners throughout the world, you know, TSN, the Fight Network, you know, BT Sport, whatnot. And he basically said that he's tired of, you know, these guys sitting there saying, you want money fights. I understand where Dana White's coming from. And my also kind of thought of that is, you know, make yourself a big money fighter. Make it to where people want to sit down and fork out $60. And it was interesting to me on Saturday throughout the day, as I heard from, you know, multiple fans about this, where they just sat back and you could tell that they're just not big on forking over $60 to watch Tyron Woodley fight or Stephen Thompson fight. And those guys have to, you know, it's, you know, yes, the UFC has done an incredible job of promoting Conor McGregor, but the reason they're promoting Conor McGregor the way they are is because Conor McGregor made himself a big money fighter. And, you know, that's, you know, and, you know, Tyron Woodley, I mean, you know, going ahead, I mean, who knows who we might see next for him, you know, because I truly believe they don't want to give Damian Maia a title shot. You look at the Jorge Masvidal fight. You talk about big money fights. Did you happen to watch the press conference on Friday with GSP and Michael Bisping?
I'm assuming there was trash talk involved.
So first off, Bisping shows up 30 minutes late. Okay. It says that his car came to, I guess he was at the Wynn and they went somewhere else. And Bisping had a very raspy voice. Clearly, Michael Bisping partied pretty hard the night before.
Was that the time he hung out with Eddie Bravo and they had a...
and basically, GSP at one point, he goes, are you still drunk?
Oh my
and,
God.
I mean, you know, and Bisping was in full on trash talking mode. And, you know, I did see some people go, oh, you know, have, you know, July 8th pay-per-view in Las Vegas headlined by Conor and Tony Ferguson and Bisping GSP as a co-main. And I'm sitting there going, first off, the UFC wouldn't do that because why would – he goes, that's two pay-per-view headliners to get, you know, a lot of pay-per-view buys. So they're not going to put them both on the same card. It's just not – what's best in their business. But that was if for people who have not seen that press conference, it was pretty comical, you know, with GSP and Michael Bisping, and also Dana White was there as well. But you know, let's talk about the main event here. Woodley Thompson, how did you score it?
Oh, that's a great question, Jason. And Mike, this is how I scored it. All right, I had Woodley win the fight on my super liberal scoring system, where I have rounds 1 and 2, 10-10 each, round 3, Woodley, 10-9, round 4, Thompson, 10-9, round 5, Woodley, 10-9. So I guess that puts that at 49-48, right, for Woodley?
Correct.
Okay, that's my scorecard. That's my liberal scorecard.
I think that is likely the right scorecard because, you know, when you look at how these rounds go, the first round, essentially nothing happened. Now, the definition to say why you would give that round to Thompson would be octagon control. He did have octagon control.
I'm going to throw up right now.
But it's hard to me to sit there and taking the 10-9 system and putting into the judges that were there cage side, I pretty much figured that they would have gone, and I didn't see the 48-47 Woodley coming. I thought 47-47 was potentially if someone went a 10-8 round, which we'll get into that. I didn't see 48-47 because I thought the judges would have the first and second round for Thompson, the third for Woodley, the fourth for Thompson, and the fifth for Woodley. Now, Woodley's the third and fifth were the only clear, I thought, rounds that you could easily go one side, Tyron Woodley. I guess fourth round you could say, you know, easily for Stephen Thompson. The first and second round, I mean, just nothing happened. And, you know, it's one of these things of it's not a robbery. It's a close scorecard. And, you know, for Tyron Woodley, he still hasn't had that championship moment. You really think about it. You think about when he won the title, it was against, a training partner at American Top Team, even though he doesn't train full time in Coconut Creek, it's still part of the American Top Team family. And then, of course, we all remember what happened at UFC 205 and now here. So he hasn't. And I just feel that Woodley, at what point does he get the respect of the MMA community overall? And I still don't think he has that. And he should have that. I mean, look, he was facing a very dangerous fighter. As a fight fan, and look, when you're tuning into a fight car, you're trying to be entertained. You want that entertainment of the last, the 24th minute of this fight, not the first 24 minutes.
Yeah, I think a big problem for this fight in terms of entertainment value was you had two fighters that the entire fight, their output was entirely predicated on what they expected out of their opponent. I mean, there was a real big-time awareness about what each fighter brought to the table. Both guys made dramatic adjustments, and those dramatic adjustments really led to a lot of cautiousness, a lot of inactivity. And, I mean, that ultimately, the onus, I think, is on Stephen Thompson just because if the exact same fight takes place and if Stephen Thompson wins the decision, I would say there is a likelihood we get a rematch. So you could make the case that Thompson has more to lose because with this loss, he does put himself in a position where he's got to go back and he's got to earn another title shot. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's able to do so. So that's a good thing for Tyron Woodley in that if you eliminate Stephen Thompson and you look at Lawler, Maya, Condit, Magny, Masvidal, Korean Zombies, Cerrone, and Gunnar Nelson, you look at that 2-9, I think you feel real good about Woodley getting impressive performances against those fighters. So that's what you got to look at if you're Tyron Woodley. I mean, if you're Woodley, it does you really no good to post-fight complain about not being promoted as a star because you don't get promoted as a star. You just become a star. I mean, the promotion should help you out. They shouldn't give you the Amanda Nunes treatment. They should have done a better job of promoting Woodley in this fight, without a doubt. But being a star is very much on the fighter. I mean, Connor and Chael, those are the textbook examples. They kind of manufactured it. For Woodley, I think his path to being a star is just being great on the mic, getting back in there in the cage, and beginning to really exhibit his potential that he showed in his ride up to the championship and in his championship win over Robbie Lawler. I think there is a potential possibility where he would be able to score those knockout victories over the welterweight contenders when you look at who's next in line.
In looking at the scorecards, and the scores were very different between the three judges, one of the things that really sticks out to you when you look at the official scorecards, actually Sal D'Amato's scorecard, because whoever wrote down the scorecard, you can see the edit jobs in this one when it comes to the fifth round where, I don't know if they originally wrote down, it looks like they wrote down, 10-9 originally, it makes it 10-8, but when you look at the scorecard, ultimately it comes down to the second round, because when you look at the two judges that scored this fight for Tyron Woodley, they gave him the second round, and that ultimately is the round that ultimately is the reason why Tyron Woodley is still the UFC welterweight champion.
Yeah. And so that was Bob Bennett, right? The executive director after the fight.
Oh,
he
man.
Called out Bob, D'Amato.
He called out D'Amato for the 10-8. I know some people were kind of wondering why this is, you know, why is Bob Bennett talking to the media, especially at a quote unquote UFC press conference. And I thought some of his wording was a little odd that he called the UFC a client. I don't know if that's the right word to use, but I mean, I guess you kind of say they are a client of the state of Nevada, but, it would be great if we could, if this became a regular thing where the executive director would talk to the media after the fight was over, it was fascinating to me to hear him up there taking questions from the media, because let's be honest about it, there's a lot of executive directors around the country that don't want to talk to the media.
Yeah, yeah. Here's my cynic in me, Jason. I feel like if there is a scenario where we have executive directors talking to the media, in a very, very short time, there's going to be some type of a controversial fiasco in terms of their answer regarding a judge or a referee that will quickly close down these post press
yeah, offices. I think it's always when there's certain states with their executive directors that you just know they don't want to give you a direct quote. Usually has to go through somebody else because they want to make sure they're not going to say something that's ultimately going to backfire on them. But I thought it was great there, you know. But for you look at this welterweight division now, and you know Woodley is off to film a movie. I believe he's doing that next week. Then I know he said he's going to go on vacation to Puerto Rico. You know, you have the Maya, you know, Masvidal fight. It's a division that at this point is very cloudy.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, even look, if Maya beats Masvidal, he needs to get the title shot. And there's Maya obviously isn't the number one guy in the eyes of this promotion. They aren't necessarily pushing him. They have put him on a roadblock again and again.
Here's my thing. Is Woodley Maya, let's say that happens later on this year, is that destined to be a Fox main event?
I think that would be a brilliant idea because that would put a lot of eyeballs on Woodley and an opportunity to potentially get a knockout win. Maya may pull out the upset in that fight, but I would imagine Woodley would be the favorite and the most likely outcome would be Woodley knockout victory. So if that's what you want to do, because Woodley is incredibly talented. He is 34. There is a chance he himself is really content with what's taking place in his life. I mean, this dude is the champion. You know how hard it is to become champ and then to continue to train and fight like the champ and that desire? Look at what happened to Miesha Tate. Granted, she fought Amanda Nunes, and maybe if Miesha Tate was as motivated as Tony Robbins, she still would have got her clock beat in. But it's kind of hard to climb that mountain and just maintain that because in order to maintain that, you have to continue to put in that type of emotional effort and cost. And that's really hard for anybody. That's why we're commended. But for Woodley, you want to promote him as a star. You want to make him a star. You need stars. It's going to come down to, I personally think, dramatic victories or dramatic fights. And the Maya fight presents a dramatic opportunity. And also, Maya Woodley would do jack in pay-per-view buys. So either you put it as a co-main event with a bigger main event on top of it, or you just throw it on TV.
Who's next for Stephen Thompson? I see two options.
Yeah. Well, I think the clear option, right, is Robbie Lawler.
Yeah, but I mean, you know,
what's number
two? But you're talking about is Lawler want to sit on the sidelines for another 4 months before his next fight?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, what's number two? You think
Neil Magny?
Okay, yeah, that I'm down for. That I'm down. What's Carlos Condit doing, by the way?
I don't think anyone knows. Okay. You know, every time you start hearing the fighter talk about that retirement word, I this is not a sport you can have one foot in, one out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that was kind of my larger point about the mountain thing, right? Like, you feel good for Tyron that he's going to shoot this movie and he's going to go on vacation. And I think every fighter should go on vacation after a fight, like a big-time fight. But the one that worries me is the movie thing. I don't know if Tyron's going to win an Academy Award, and that may be a net negative. So stuff like that, that when you show one foot out the door, that's when you begin to have questions. But it shows the respect that Carlos Condit has, right? The fact that he's still ranked fourth in this division, and he has just two wins in his last six fights. Or no, excuse me, two wins in the last eight fights. So
yeah, well, let's look at the losses, though. I mean, it's all legit dudes.
Yeah, but the wins. Let's look at the wins. Martin Kamen and Tiago Alves.
That's 1 point for Daniel.
And well, you got one too, but he's the number four guy. So yeah. I'm interested in this conversation. All the guys we talked about, who is the next line of welterweights that you see on the horizon here?
Well, if Lorenz Larkin was going to be in the UFC, he would be one. By the way, I don't know if you saw this. Misha Zhurkhanov has re-signed with the UFC.
Very good, very good.
Which is great to hear. But Albert Tumanov is gone from the UFC. He is signed with ACB. So,
you know,
they're definitely looking for somebody to step up. Maybe is it Kamaru Usman?
Oh, I guess that's the young guy who looked great in his last fight, man. Oh man, maybe it's Santiago Ponzinibbio, but between those two, Usman would be the one I feel better about. Look, they're probably hoping GSP looks like $1 million and or Khabib Nurmagomedov decides to start fighting at 170, because there is some issues there. Donald Cerrone may find himself in a pretty situation if he continues to maintain consistency.
The problem with Khabib goes to 170, he doesn't have that size advantage. Is his grappling as much of an advantage at 170 as it is at 155?
Definitely not, but also the skill level, I would say, on the ground at 170 isn't where it's at 155.
Oh no, 170 yeah. has, I mean, when GSP was running this division, it was all about the wrestling. GSP leaves, everything came about striking.
Yeah, obviously Maya's the exception.
You know, and I think that was probably one of the most puzzling things about Woodley throughout that fight. I mean, I'm sitting there going, at what point is he going to shoot?
Yeah, and he didn't. I mean, he's.
I think he only had two. I think he only had two takedowns. He got one of them down, but I think that was probably one of the most puzzling things about how that fight played out. It's just like, man, come on, are you going to try to get this fight to the ground?
Well, at the end of the day, man, he stood and traded with one of the best guys on the feet at 170, mm-hmm. two consecutive fights, and he held his own. Shooting, that would have been interesting. It would have been interesting to see what the result of shooting would have been. Because obviously the upside is you get the takedown. The downside is maybe kind of what you saw out of Rashad. I mean, he had some success with the takedowns in that Dan Kelly fight, ended up getting lambasted on the feet though. So at the end of the day, Woodley's game plan did work out. It was still relatively the type of fight where if you're a casual watching, you don't necessarily feel invested in the Tyron Woodley brand, but Woodley has definitely become just an exceptionally talented fighter. When you think about it, in the very, very early moments of his career, the foundation of his game was the wrestling, and then he utilized the power to become a dangerous striker, and he is a really complete fighter.
You mentioned about Rashad Evans. Now, 2-5 in his last Silver. Seven fights. A split decision loss here to Dan Kelly. You have to begin to wonder, is that R word going to start coming out of Rashad Evans' mouth?
It should. I mean, I'm not saying it should, but it should. Like, he, just one of those things, man. You lose to Dan Kelly. Like, Dan Kelly is the ultimate, don't judge a book by its cover guy, where you watch him fight and you're like, oh man, this guy should retire if he loses to Dan Kelly. But then you really look at what's taking place here, and it's amazing. Dan Kelly is so much better than I thought heading into the UFC, man. I feel like I picked against him in every single one of his fights.
When I was sitting there watching the fights, I was thinking about that exact same thing. Like, I think I have gone against Dan Kelly in every one of his UFC fights. You know, one of the things that I wonder about Dan going forward, because a lot of the narrative after this fight is over is about his knee. I do wonder if there may be a commission that would maybe start requiring more medical testing on that knee to decide whether they give him a license.
Well, you were talking about New York. I mean, I don't think we'll see him fight in New York anytime soon. I think there's going to be some commissions that may have a hesitancy to that. I think there's some commissions like the one like Texas where they just don't care if he has a leg or not. So I at the end of the day, I think it's a non-negotiator for Dan Kelly probably to have surgery when you're 39 years old. I mean, this guy is just, this is it. This is his moment. Mm-hmm. What's happening right now, his approach to fighting, his success in the cage, the fact this guy, Dan Kelly, at 39, after looking the way he did on that Ultimate Fighter show, is like, what, 6-1 in the UFC? He just beat a former champion. This is it, man. I really doubt that he's going to be able to go under the knife and then come back at age 41 and return to form. So he's just got to ride this wave wherever it can take him.
Yeah, we were actually talking about that prior to recording of this podcast. He turns 40 on Halloween. So, you know, if you're talking about if he has to go, you know, have surgery on that knee, you know, you're talking, a year away. So that's something that as long as he can get licensed and tape up that knee the way he tapes it up. But you have to imagine that there may be some commissions that would look at that going forward. But a huge win for Dan Kelly. And, you know, probably you have to think that, I mean, top 10 guy, right?
You better give this dude a top 10 guy. Time ain't his friend. All right. He's 39. Time ain't his friend. He's damn compelling, too. Dan Kelly is damn compelling. But I don't know.
Who do you give him, though? I mean, let's look at the lower top 10. So, you know, from 6 to 10, that's Whitaker, who we now know is fighting Jacare. Anderson, Vitor, who fights this weekend against Calvin Gastelum, who's number 10. And number 9 is Derek Brunson.
Oh, man. That's a good question. Maybe you give him the...
Do you give him, like, a Christoph Jocko?
Yeah.
Even though I think Jocko just got a fight book, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe you look at the Vitor Gastelum loser, but I don't feel good about that fight either. I don't know, man. It is a bit tougher at middleweight. What's Derek Brunson up to? Is he still recovering?
I don't think he has a fight book off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I know. But I mean that may be where you go.
Yeah. And it's the type of fight where on the other side of the top 10, they ain't too excited to put the pen to paper to take that Dan Kelly fight for sure. I mean, this one's the fights. Dan Kelly's going to want this fight. His opponent probably wouldn't. But you got to give the guy a top 10. I mean, assuredly, next time we look at these rankings, he's going to be the 15th or 14th ranked guy.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah, he's definitely got to be in that top 15. But, you know, a huge win for him. David Timier, I mean, I think a lot of people were – we all knew that this was going to be, you know, most likely be an incredible fight. It was an incredible fight. But didn't see him winning the way he did. And just and the thing you love about it is, you know, during that fight, he did mix it up with the grappling as well.
Yeah, he looked good on the feet, and he really utilized the grappling to secure this fight for him. There were great moments out of this fight for Lando Vannetta. This was certainly the most entertaining fight on the main card, without a doubt. It was obviously a weak co-main event, but, you know, it wasn't really a co-main event. So, at the end of the day, Lando Vannetta, definitely the worst performance he's had thus far. A lot of the momentum is stunted, but there was plenty to take, be positive about and think that he's going to rebound and be successful long term. But this is more about David Timer. This is more about maybe taking him for granted in this fight and underestimating the potential he had, because in this fight, he showcased himself as the better striker. Lando took some chances, and what hurt him was the consistency from David there. David's consistency of landing his strikes allowed him to win, and in addition to just a diverse game in terms of securing some rounds with wrestling, grappling, and whatnot. So all in all, not a major negative for Lando Vannetta. I think he's going to rebound. He looked sharp. The 30-27 doesn't do him justice. With that being said, David Timier, the story is him at lightweight. He's a guy to circle, and he can go home and realize he was a winner in a co-main event of a UFC pay-per-view.
Yeah, so as they were walking out, I'm like, man, it's unbelievable. This is a co-main event. Even though we knew it was going to be a great fight, you're still kind of crazy there. When they announced the fight that had been elevated to the main card, following Khabib and Tony being pulled off, I was surprised they went with Cynthia Calvillo and Amanda Cooper. Did not expect that they would go with that matchup, that they go there, but just a slick transition on the ground by Cynthia going from the Anaconda choke and then ultimately getting the rear naked choke. This is a fighter that just over 6 months ago made her pro debut. And I guess that's probably in the men's divisions in the UFC. I don't think you could realistically see this happen for the most part. I mean, obviously there's rare exceptions like CM Punk, whatnot, but it's more likely that a women's fighter can make it this quickly to the UFC. And also it also does help that, you know, she is inside, you know, Team Alpha Male, and, you know, obviously Uriah Faber still has a great relationship with UFC.
Yeah. It's look, Amanda Cooper went to the finals of an Ultimate Fighter show. And it's worth noting that Cynthia is 29 years old, so I'm not particularly sure how long she's been training, but she does have amateur fights that go all the way back to 2012 on her Sherdog. So maybe I would be real interested to see, you know, okay, so you look at a Sherdog, Jason, and she goes 2012 to 2014 as an amateur, 2-year period, and then she debuts August 2016. The road to what transpired and when she decided to fight professionally is something I would be interested in terms of how much time in that period she invested in her skills. It appears to be a lot, because Amanda Cooper looked like the fighter that just recently debuted in this one. And to be fair, she did just recently debut, but in this one, Amanda Cooper attempted to take the fight down where she wanted to, and Cynthia simply looked like the more veteran fighter there, with the transitions, with the confidence on the ground, and obtaining the submission win. So despite the fact that Cynthia debuted not too long ago, I think potentially if you take a closer look, there's a lot more experience than one would expect.
And how about her calling out for her teammate to get in the UFC, Joseph Morales, who's a undefeated fighter. You got like that, sticking up for your teammate. Cool. Yeah, that's great to see there. Yeah. But, you know, huge win there by Cynthia. And, of course, main card kicked off with Alistair Overeem, who ended up having food poisoning, went to hospital, got IV. Everything's good with that. I thought this was one of Alistair's better performances. He did take some massive elbows from Mark Hunt, but man, that knockout's gonna be on the highlight reel for a long time.
Yeah, Alistair Overeem is sitting really, really pretty, man. He looks good. He looks really good, and I really thought early the story in Alistair is the second you kind of get ready to write him off, he's able to just look amazing. What he's done recently, man, in his UFC career, you know, outside of the Stipe loss, obviously, he has returned to that Strikeforce form that you could really get behind and be like, this is a destroyer of worlds. So I'm not sure what's next for Alistair, and I'm also interested to see how long he can keep this up, because he is up there in age. He has so much experience. He looks great. Mark Hunt, not so much. He had some nice moments, but at the end of the day, it seems like this may be the last time we see Mark Hunt fight. He kind of has one foot out the door. You can't blame him if you have a lawsuit against the company you are working for. But story is this. Overeem is a great fighter. He continues to be incredibly talented. He's one of the top commodities in the heavyweight division. He's a guy they need to build around. He's an interesting fighter. I would anticipate a co-main event in his future. And for Mark Hunt, it's been a fun career. I would highly, highly doubt we ever see him fight in the UFC again.
You know, and that kind of became a little bit of a story heading into UFC 209 on fight days. It came out that he was being paid $750,000 was his show money, which a lot of people pointed out. You know, yes, we feel that, you know, you have your issues with UFC, but no one else is going to pay you that kind of money. And so we'll see what happens there. Do want to get some fan questions in. By the way, it should be noted that, so after the fights are over, Daniel, I put out that, you know, the tweet, hey, you know, some of your questions, comments. The first comment was, that was some BS. Well, he didn't say BS. He said something else. And then another one was, what the F was that BS? So kind of gives you where fans are going there.
Yeah.
Another one says, you know, this came from Lex Jansen, why are Overeem and Hunt making more money than the champion? Well, that's Stipe Miocic's problem. He's got to negotiate a better deal. Apparently, also Overeem and Mark Hunt's people can negotiate a better deal. The other question that we got was from Tim Torres, the only option now, Conor versus Tony. And how do you like Conor's chances of beating Tony and Khabib back to back? I think Conor has, I like Conor's chances more against Tony than Khabib. And the reason, and we talked about this on the preview show, is just the fact of Khabib's takedown abilities. But it would be very interesting to see how Conor versus Tony would go. I would definitely still favor Conor in that fight. I would still favor him over Khabib. And the reason is I do have some question marks about Khabib and his striking defense that we saw in Michael Johnson. But in terms of chances of beating both those guys back to back, I would still favor Conor in both those fights.
Yeah. I mean, I would say at 155 and at 145, Jason, I think I'm just not going to pick against Conor until he loses again, honestly. That's just the way I'm going to go about it, because I've been wrong on his fights for a while now. Now, if he fights a 170-pounder, we could get into a different conversation. Look, I think Tony's next fight is probably against Khabib, because largely due to the fact that I don't think Conor's waking up today jazzed up to fight Tony Ferguson. And that's just the way you know, that's just the way of the world currently. So despite the fact that it's got to suck if you're Tony Ferguson to sign that dotted line again to fight Khabib for another time, man, it's got to just be infuriating. At the end of the day, these two guys in this division, they're each other's kind of rival at this point in time. And that fight makes the most sense. So I think Tony's next fight is going to be against Nurmagomedov. I think, you know, if Nurmagomedov fights again ever at some point in time.
When it comes to the preliminary card, in terms of memorable performances, you first up got to go Darren Elkins. You know, for the first 10 minutes of this fight, Mirsad Bektik beat the crap out of Darren Elkins. And then the knockout. You know, one of the best come from behind victories we've ever seen. I think, you know, there's, you look at, you know, obviously people are always going to point to Anderson Silva against Chael Sonnen 1, I think, as the greatest comeback of all time based on the fact that it was 5 rounds and Chael had beat him up for 4.5 rounds. But, man, and I think it's one of those fights that with how it ended, you know, the ceiling was so high for Mirsad Bektik, and the way people thought about him, man, that ceiling has come down major with Mirsad Bektik following this loss.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting that and he won that first round 10-8. He was controlling that second round, so it's not like...
You know what? The first round, before I even tweeted 10-8, I almost wrote 10-7.
You could make a case for it. I mean, that was damn dominant. There wasn't a whole... So Bektik looked better. He looked like the better fighter. He just lost. It all comes down to how he rebounds. This could be incredibly, incredibly demoralizing, but it could also rebuild the fire. I would say it's one of the best comeback wins I've ever seen. You mentioned the Silva one. The other one I would raise to you would be Scott Smith's knockout over Pete Sell back in the day. That one was just... That's probably the best one of all time, I think. But
I think you got to put Tim Boach over Yushin Okami.
Was that
Japan card, I want to say?
Exactly. So I'm not sure that's going to be a part of the top three, but it may be fourth. And there may be a couple other ones that I'm forgetting. But what a beautiful story. Elkins is a guy that you noticed it. It is crazy that this guy is such a big underdog. Now, he fought like it in the first 2 rounds, but he's a veteran fighter with a long track record of success. A dog always in the fight, and he bit the hell out of his opponent there.
Yeah, a tremendous win for him. Of course, that was following Yuri Alcantara, his come-from-behind victory, a knee bar submission in the second round against Luke Sanders. Also on the preliminary card, Marcin Tybura got a stoppage victory in the third round. Mark Godbeer with a decision win over Daniel Spitz. Tyson Pedro, a knockout over Paul Craig. And also Albert Morales with a win over Andre Sukuntha via a split decision. Tyson Pedro is one of those guys that everyone's has their eyes on. He's training. Splits his training, you know, between his home and also coming to the States at Jackson Wink. So he's definitely a guy to pay attention to there. Overall, you know, outside of the main event, it was a decent card, but everyone's going to remember the main event, and that's why everyone's going to be so down on UFC 209.
Yeah. I thought the most fun I had watching mixed martial arts this whole weekend was the back-to-back come-from-behind victories. The Alcantara win over Sanders, the Elkins went over Bektik. That was the highlight. The main event, not so much. There was some nice things on that main card. A phenomenal performance by Tyson Pedro. Moving back to Alcantara, Luke Sanders, a great submission win by Alcantara. I will say it's worth mentioning that Luke Sanders kind of completely threw away this fight because he had Alcantara dead to rights, mm-hmm. and then he landed an illegal knee, gave Alcantara time to recover, and he lost that fight. So he's going to beat himself up over that one. But, yeah, I thought the Alcantara-Elkins fight, I thought that those two fights were just phenomenal.
Yeah, it was a great night of fights. We actually were – I was at my buddy's house. We were watching the fights, and we had one TV on the UFC fights and one TV on the boxing fight, which was a good fight as well.
Who won that one?
Keith Thurman by split decision. So it was a good fight, and you know, apparently did well in the television ratings from some stuff I saw over on Sunday. So you know, we'll see if boxing can kind of put some more of those fights. Keith Thurman's a guy that I know very well. He's from the Tampa Bay area, and you know, always a guy that I'm definitely going to be rooting for. We're going to talk about Bellator 174, which took place on Friday night at the Windstar World Casino in Thackerville, Oklahoma. Of course, we noted on the preview show this fight card went through a lot of changes in terms of they've lost two fights, and then you know, ended up two of the four fights on the main card were catchweight bouts. Rafael Lovato Jr. scores the ties the sixth fastest victory in Bellator history with a 13-second win over Charles Hackman. You know, maybe the stoppage was a little early, but the stoppage was coming. So a huge win there for Rafael Lovato Jr. And, you know, being there at 185 pounds, this was a catchweight of 194. Charles Hackman did take this fight on very short notice when Lovato Jr.'s initial opponent pulled out of the event. So, you know, you look at it, I mean, how many times have we talked about Bellator's 185-pound division? You know, so it, a nice addition there. Justin Wren gets a win over Rowan Pozzato. You know, a fight that just it was a showcase fight. You know, I don't know why a commission regulated that fight, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, you look at Justin Wren. Yes, he has a couple years off, but, you know, he's won all these fights now in a row. And Palazzo now, I believe, is 3-8 or 3-9 in his last 11 or 12 fights. You know, a fight that you just hope you would see Justin Wren get a step up in competition. You know, Fernando Gonzalez gets a decision win. Did not understand the 30-26 card. I thought it was 2-1 for Fernando Gonzalez. You know, once again, Fernando, this guy, he just turns it on in the third round. And it's a guy that you wonder if he ever gets in a 5-round fight, what kind of a fight will he go with? And then, of course, the main event, Julia Budd gets a TKO win in the fourth round of Marlos Kunin to win the inaugural women's featherweight title. I'll say this about Julia Budd, and I was watching this fight live. There was not a lot of interaction on social media when it came to the Bellator fights, and Julia Budd, has not put on exciting fights in Bellator, and that's the fact. And, you know, she could find herself in a situation that if she loses, she finds herself kind of like Tony Johnson, where you don't have a fun, exciting fighting style. Bellator's going to part ways with you.
Did Bellator part ways with Tony Johnson?
Yes, they did. They parted ways with Tony Johnson. They did not like his grinding style. Oh, and
I didn't realize that, actually. Wow. Well, look, Julia Budd, she is a pretty boring fighter. You know what? I should have spent more time thinking about this Julia Budd Marlos Kunin fight. I feel like on the pre-fight show, I definitely didn't, which is why I picked Marlos Kunin. But as soon as the fight was taking place, I'm like, I am stupid. I mean, Julia Budd, first and foremost, she ain't excited. I mean, she's boring as hell, but she understands how to win. She's peaking right now. She's got a great wrestling game that's going to score her points. And Kunin kind of has checked out, I would say, which is kind of why she retired. And not realizing that kind of angers me a tad bit, because it was so clear that there was a major gap in just who has a firm grasp in their prime. Bud does. With that being said, God, there ain't anyone watching that fight that's excited to kind of watch her fight again, despite the fact she got the finish. I mean, those first three rounds were crap.
I tell you, as I was watching that fight, I was like, so did I just turn this off and start playing Xbox?
Yeah, man.
I mean, it wasn't fun to watch. I think if you're Bellator and you sit back at it and look at it now, you go, well, I'll tell you one of the things I thought of watching the fight, I go, now I understand Bellator's decision why they were going to put this on the prelims last year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, look, and Bellator wants to put on fun, exciting fights. They're going to get people to the television set. I mean, after the way that fight ended, what draws you to the television set to watch Julia Budd next time she fights?
Nothing. I mean, there isn't a whole lot of interest there. I mean, it was a weird car, man. Pretty forgettable. You mentioned it. The Gonzalez-Gertz fight was pretty good. Gonzalez size.
Yeah, clearly the best fight of the night.
Yeah, yeah. The size of Gonzalez, pretty big advantage.
How do you regulate a fight where one guy misses weight and there's a 8-pound weight difference?
Yeah. Yeah, that. I mean,
going to reach out to Brandon this week and kind of ask him about that whole situation. I mean, yes, he was coming up from 155 to take this fight on short notice, but he weighs in at 165, and your opponent misses weight. You know, I think Fernando was 173.5 or somewhere along those lines. I just, you know, makes you wonder why the commission said, okay, let's go ahead. Let's book this fight. And I just hope maybe Brandon Gertz got a good amount of money because his opponent missed weight. Hopefully that's the case.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. Wren Lovato, those were Strikeforce showcase bouts. Wren looked great finally. Lovato got the head kick. Did you watch the Gabrielle Holloway Alexis Dufresne fight? I did not. But
I did not. I saw the highlights after the fact, and that is clearly not the result Bellator wanted.
Yeah, because with Holloway, I mean, she's a 5-5 fighter, and this one 6-5 now. hard to market around that. But I mean, what did the finish look like? Was it just a beatdown?
Yeah.
That's so
what it was. Yeah, I mean, beatdown down on the ground. A huge win for Gabrielle Holloway. She gets her first win in the UFC. Emily Decote, first win in Bellator. Emily Decote went over Katie Collins, submission in the first round. Cody Pfister also a submission in the first round over Jonathan Gray, announces his retirement after a fight is over. But it was one of those retirement announcements that it was like, yeah, I'm retiring, but I may return at some point.
Yeah, he's 26. When you're 26, unless you're Cole Conrad going to the dairy farm, I think that's where he went. Cody Pfister, would he cut him out? But, I mean, it is demoralizing. To lose a Sage Northcutt, so that would be tough. So, yeah, I mean, look, Cody Pfister, poor guy, didn't get the credit he deserved on the UFC Embedded Series, but he comes out, gets the win over Jonathan Gary, and who knows, maybe he'll be back, but at 26 years old, I ain't listening to any retirement talks.
It's something to mention, and going back to Marlos Kunin, did Bellator catch a break here by her not winning the fight? Because if you're announcing retirement right after the fight's over, you first off think about, was this already on her mind?
Oh, man, did they catch a break? Well, maybe they could just retire the division.
It makes you wonder what they're doing. I think there's much more optimism at 125 for them than there is 145. I mean, who are you going to go out and sign? You know, pretty much looks like there's a pipeline evicted to the UFC, so you're probably not going to get a lot of those fighters. I don't know. And, I mean, Julia's got to. She's gotta, you know, be a more entertaining fighter. Or it's like I said, she's gonna find herself like some other fighters, in Bellator, where, you know, because they don't have an exciting fighting style, they lose a fight. Bellator is gonna say, you know what, you know, we wish you best in your future endeavors.
Yeah, and it's interesting because she's unquestionably like the most talented featherweight that's not in the UFC. Like, it's not even close, really. I mean, she's got 8 consecutive victories. And it's a weird, weird place to be in when you're in the women's featherweight division business and you're not a Zuffa, or not a Zuffa property, right? A WME property. I don't know where you go with adding these fighters. For Bellator, their number 2 featherweight right now might be Gabrielle Holloway, right? Or who's the – do they have anybody else?
I'm trying off the top of my head. I can't think of any. I mean, Alexis Dufresne would have been the fighter that would have made the most sense. But, you know, looking on Bellator.com, I mean, they've got, 8 fighters under contract. But I mean, none of them really stick out in terms of who should be next.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what they do there. Of course, the next Bellator event still, not till the end of the month, March 31st, Rampage and Mo. There was a because of the finishes in the first 2 fights, they got a lot of promotion out for that fight card. Of course, the rematch of Rampage and King Mo. I had somebody ask me the other day, who do you think is going to win? I didn't even think about it hard. I said King Mo.
You didn't.
I with Rampage, you wonder about motivation. You wonder about, I mean, you see the fact of is, you know, how much is Rampage weighing heading into his camp for this one? I think Mo gets the job done. I didn't think hard about it.
Yeah, I mean, you may be right, man. I'm up at 3 in the morning and Rampage is up twitching, streaming his video game. So,
well, it's only midnight on the West Coast.
Oh, yeah. Good point. So, you may be right, man. Yeah.
Yeah, it should be on Friday during the Bellator 174 broadcast. It was announced that Marcus Galvo, the former Bantamweight champion, moving up to 145. He's going to take on Emmanuel Sanchez on that fight card. So a nice matchup there between those two. Of course, that's the end of the month. Now, coming up this weekend, you do have UFC Fight Night 106 from Fortaleza, Brazil. Of course, main card on FS1, headlined by Vitor Belfort and Kevin Gastelum. Also, you got Shogun Hua and John Volante. Edson Barboza, Benil Dariush. Love that matchup. Jessica Formiga, Reg Borg, Betch Gohea, Mary Renault, and Alex Oliveira, Tim Means. That will be your 6-fight main card on FS1. Of course, we'll have a preview show coming up on Friday of this week, as we'll talk about everything that's going on. By the way, Joe Soto, who's going to be on that Fight Pass preliminary card, he was on the most recent episode of the MMA Report podcast, so you can look for that interview as well. You know, a nice little fight card. We'll talk about this more about later on this week, but I don't know what to expect out of Vitor Belfort.
That has been literally this narrative around Vitor Belfort for about 10, 12, 13, 14, 15 years, Jason. I mean, you're talking about one of the most inconsistent fighters of all time that has displayed phenomenal upside, great downside. With that being said, as time progresses, my general rule is that consistency begins to become consistent in a negative way. What I would be interested in is Kevin Gastelum weighing in, despite the fact that this is a, you know, a heavier weight type fight. I always have questions when it comes to Kelvin kind of jumping on the scale.
One final thing is I literally just got this question on social media, so we'll get in here right at the end from Lex. He says, what do you want more, Mark Hunt to retire or Hunt versus Travis Brown?
Mark Hunt versus Travis Brown. It ain't happening. I love watching Mark Hunt fight, but I'm telling you what, man.
To me, that would be a perfect main event for their June card in New Zealand.
Ooh, main event. Do some main event press. Oh, I'm sure the UFC would love it. It's interesting. I mean, look, you think Mark Hunt fights again in the UFC? Am I being a bit too dramatic and saying like this is it?
I say no.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, because it was kind of, you know, even before the decision was announced, you see Hunt walking out. You know, and that was my first thought. Is this probably the last memory we have of Mark Hunt inside the UFC octagon? But I think if you're the UFC, I mean, you want to have Mark Hunt still fighting. I mean, he's a guy that people are going to come to the television set to watch.
Yeah, yeah. He is valuable, but it's just one of those things, Jason. If you sue a promotion, I just don't know if the promotion would want to put you on their.
But they paid him damn well, though.
yo, if you're the UFC, though, they did pay him damn well. If you're the UFC, you put Mark Hunt on a card and his opponent tests positive for PEDs again. That's a risk, man. That's a real risk. And you can't guarantee that a guy won't get caught.
Yeah, it's but yeah, I think most likely that's the last time we see Mark Hunt. I just don't think we see him again.
Rest in peace, Mark Hunt.
You know, and that man, what a brutal knockout. But man, those elbows he were laying, poof, those were some massive elbows. So but that is going to wrap it up for this episode of the MMA Report post-fight podcast. Of course, these come out every Monday morning following the events. Of course, we'll have our preview show coming up on Friday as we're going to break down UFC Fight Night 106. And, of course, I also have the MMA Report podcast this week. We'll have a couple of Valor interviews, plus we'll talk about some of the latest news and notes going on in the world of MMA. So once again, this has been the MMA Report post-fight podcast, which is here every Monday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Crush Report with Jeff Crushell.
There's nothing more important in professional sport than maximizing player potential. And in a recent meeting of the minds, the Kansas City Royals traveled to Edmonton to share insights on player development with the Oilers. Here's Royals Vice President and Assistant GM of Player Personnel, J.J. Piccolo.
Edmonton Oilers were very gracious in allowing us to sit in some meetings, speak with their coaching staff. Of all the sports that exist, there's more parallels between hockey and baseball when you're talking about development and the way our draft process works than any other two sports. To hear their take on how they need to get to the potential future Edmonton Oilers that they have under control, whether it be in juniors or in college, and how they try to develop players through other coaches. And that was a very interesting concept. I think one of the things I really took away from listening to their scouts and some of their front office personnel, the character and toughness is really at the top of the charts for them, which is what we talk about an awful lot. And then sometimes we get a little bit too caught up in the tools that the player may possess, which are very important. But to hear them talk about character and toughness, and then to share that with our scouts and our scouting director and some of our coaches, I thought it was very valuable.
Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kerschell, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.